Sweet 16. Maybe not quite as sweet as I'd like it to be. We got a full house here. And by the way, this is going to be a basketball, college basketball only pod. It'll be a little shorter. And then we'll have out at the same time, pretty much, will be our NFL. And by the way, in the NFL, every win total for every team is now released. And we're going to go over how Fez's numbers, because Fez had his own sports book open there for a while, at least amongst us, and how they compare with what DraftKings is, who did the world openers. Is that right, Fez? World openers?
Yes, sir.
No one else had it before. You first, then DraftKings.
Bet Rivers and DraftKings, second, third. I don't know which one came out first. They right. Concurrently, they popped up numbers.
Listen, if we listen close, we can hear Scott typing. He's the new stenographer for the show, Scott Seidenberg, AJ Hoffman. All right, AJ, let's get it straight. You're up a little in the bracket. I got to be honest, it felt like everything went against me that could have gone against me. I don't think anything could have gone against, and still, it's really going to come down to two games for us.
I think it's really going to come down to one game.
How honestly. Do you see it?
I see it as if Iowa State beats Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
And both of our brackets go according to plan.
Yes.
The rest of the way, you're going to win.
So wait, but if Iowa State beats Illinois, but then they lose to UConn.
Oh, that could happen too. Yeah, you might be right. So maybe the second game matters more.
Yeah. Now there is that Creighton, Tennessee. If you split those, I think you got it.
Unless Iowa State gets to the final four.
And gets to the final, you know, I would agree with that. Because we got Houston the same, Purdue the same. So really, it comes down to those couple games. Now, you got a free rolling away with Alabama because you got Alabama to the Sweet 16, and I don't have them. So am I right? I think I'm right about that.
Do you have North Carolina there?
Yeah, I thought so. Oh, let me see. Who else would it have been?
Arizona.
I had Arizona for sure.
But did you have Arizona beating North Carolina?
I had Arizona against Baylor, then Arizona beating St. Mary's.
Oh, you had St. Mary's going. Yeah. That was one of the things.
Oh, that was a horrible.
Because I had St. Mary's out in the first round, and you had St. Mary's winning multiple games.
Yeah, no, I'm aware. Thank you.
just making sure you're aware.
It's interesting that Sleevey and I were making fun of you the night before the tournament. We were going, St. Mary's losing. Come on. Like, we were laughing about it. I should have known. All right.
Now you want to buy out.
Well, here's the thing. You're at 82%, right?
82.9.
Fez is very prescient, very wise thought. It has to be better than 85 to count.
Mm-hmm.
Makes me think, no.
Okay.
but I would rather be in your position right now if I could change back immediately after the tournament.
Okay.
I'm understandably in a position I'd rather not be in.
Now, here's the irony of irony. There's someone else that put a bracket in.
Yep.
ESPN.
Mm-hmm.
And what was your percentage?
97.5. Incredible.
See, AJ, do you see how Fez and I feel when you do well in the NFL?
Come on.
Listen, I called this because when you guys were going back and forth before the end of the pod, I said, I'm going to put one in and do better than both of you.
I got to be honest. Your first game, I think it wasn't, I don't think I was awake yet when you lost your best bet.
Yeah, BYU, yes.
And I thought he's going to have a disaster. I would have bet so much money that you weren't at 97% at that point.
Well, because all my upset picks all came through.
So which was?
My Grand Canyon win, and I actually had Grand Canyon win in the second
round.
We're
talking about the St. Mary's again.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Oh, wait, Grand Canyon beat
St. Mary's.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And what was it, Princeton, right?
James Madison. Yale, you're talking about.
Yale.
Beat Auburn.
Yeah.
And Yale beating Auburn.
First of all, I had James Madison in my bracket.
Okay, so did I.
All right.
But Yale is a touchy subject for Scott because while he is at 97.5.
Wait, Montclair State accepted him, but Yale didn't?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Is that how it went?
Unfortunately, yeah.
It was touchy. No, go ahead.
Scott, what's your total potential points in ESPN?
Oh, okay.
AJ's like foreshadowing.
1130.
So hold on a second. The guy's in the 97th percentile. Can he have 5 minutes before you somehow?
His champion lost in the first round.
But that
your bracket's exploded.
That's like one of my only losses, though.
I
did really well in the first two rounds.
What's your percentage right now?
97.5.
What's your percentage?
It is 83.9.
Okay. Moving on.
But yes, I do not have a national champion.
Tomorrow, who knows if anyone dies, right?
That's a good point.
Like Shanahan says we all might be dead tomorrow. And
that's true.
So, he'll die.
If NC State wins the title, you're in good shape, Scott, because that's a team nobody has winning. And if you're right on everything else.
That's a good point. Speaking of this, and we're going to get to the eight games, I've got two best bets. And one of them, Fez, I might make my biggest bet of the college basketball season.
Oh, my.
Now, I've only bet like three or four games.
This will be interesting.
No, but I love a game. I love it.
Right.
I have to say contractually, there are no locks. But you know what? I'm wink, wink. This thing looks. I'm going to be interested to see, and I'll tell you the game right now. It's NC State Marquette. I'm not saying who, but let's do it rotation order.
Rotation order, or like we were doing?
Yeah,
before?
Yeah, do what we did before. So okay. Reverse chronological. I guess
chronological order. Yeah, all right, we'll start on Thursday with Clemson, Arizona. Oh, sorry, Scott. You can give the lines.
Arizona 7.5 point favorites.
Clemson is getting by, so, and I don't want to call it luck, but they're forcing teams to take threes, and teams are just missing threes. New Mexico went 3 from 23. Baylor went 6 of 24. And you know what? The same thing could happen to Arizona. There's a world where that could happen, but it's unlikely that they're going to shoot 25% worse than what they normally shoot over and over again. I just can't bet on that. Arizona has something that New Mexico and Baylor didn't have also, which is an offensive threat in the paint. Balo cutting to the rim. He's still a better defensive player than offensive player, but he provides something other than what Yves Misi had for Baylor, which is basically just putting back trash, putbacks. The fear, if you like Arizona, and I lean Arizona, I like the over. The over is my play in this game. The fear is that Caleb Love just decides he wants to do it all and shoots them out of the game. He is very capable of doing that. He did it to North Carolina last year. He's done it to a lot of teams a lot of times. But between Pelle Larsen, Keshawn Johnson, Kylan Boswell, they've got too many shooters.
A lot of names here. So what?
Too many shooters on the floor.
Okay.
For them to all be missing. So both these teams looked vulnerable in their last game. Arizona was way closer than I'm comfortable with against what I thought was a dead Dayton team. And Clemson blew a 15-point lead against Baylor and they needed missed free throws to hold them off at the end. I just think that Arizona speeds this up around 70 possessions, and they've just got better success shooting the prior two than Clemson's opponents did. So I like over 151.5 here, my favorite play on this game.
Okay, so now how many plays of this level will you have amongst the
I've got one best bet and one other game that I'm going to say
so
is
like
a
you
life.
You got three, so this is like your third best.
This is probably my third favorite.
Okay. Let's look at this bracket just for a second. So New Mexico was playing Clemson. A lot of people had New Mexico. Just what happened in that game?
New Mexico shot 3 of 23 from 3 points.
Okay. And then Baylor and Colgate, and Baylor won, right?
Baylor won.
And then Baylor somehow lost against
Clemson.
Clemson.
Baylor shot.
How did that happen?
25% from three.
All right, so you say forcing people to take threes. Now, in this day and age, it seems like teams want to take threes.
They do.
So the theory is if you force them to take threes, that means you're going to be dominant inside, like you're packing the paint or something,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, so Clemson's, their best players are their interior guys.
Okay.
It's hard to score inside.
You were just saying about Arizona having an inside threat. You're saying they do, but maybe it's not going to be so effective.
Yeah.
Okay, so it all comes down to shooting.
All comes down to shooting. You can't shoot as poorly as their first two opponents did and win. You can't do it.
Was the venue a place? I'm always interested when these venues, it seems like game after game.
It's hard to tell when there's only three games there. So it's like, I mean, but yeah, it certainly could have been a possibility. But Clemson actually shot pretty well, and they're not a great shooting team.
So, Fez, what's your general thoughts?
Arizona -7 is my best bet.
Ooh.
It's basic strategy 101. I got one team, and RJ, you've documented this numerous times, how Cinderella is a great story, mm-hmm. but Cinderella doesn't stick around past midnight. So Clemson is not worthy to be in the Elite Eight. Arizona is, and the venue favors Arizona greatly. The game's in L.A., so it's right smack dab in Pac-12 country. Arizona travels well. I expect it to be a very pro-home crowd for Arizona and a good spot for them. I think they get the job done.
Speaking of the whole home court and travel. Do we have our records for the picks we had for the Thursday and Friday? Now, Fez, who, how'd you do in the general tournament with your overall picks?
Meh. Eh? Choppy.
But you went 4-0 on the one seeds, right?
I won all my bridge jumpers, yes.
Okay. So how much did that – so it was like – You were betting like it was. They were what, the 40-1 range typically?
Or anywhere from 45-1 down to 25-1. Houston was I only had to lay minus 2,500.
It's funny. I heard more than a couple people talking about various shows or whatever, and they all said, "Yeah, it seems crazy what he's doing, but he says the math is right, so I guess maybe it is. He's smart." And then they would say, I don't know why he does it. He just loves attention. It seems like that it's not only critiquing your picks, but there's a lot of critiques of your mental state, like what your intentions are. What do you think that's about? Did you hear any of that?
I did.
What did you think?
Reminds me of...
You think they're jealous?
Reminds me of the Hulk Hogan, like when Macho Man's get, guess who shows up for no reason at all? You, man, laying your 4,500 on Connecticut.
Now, what was the closest one of those games?
None of them were close.
Houston went to overtime.
That was the second round.
They were 4-1 favorite, yeah. The first round was as easy peasy.
Okay.
No drama.
In general, you were laying. What was your average lay if you did a price weighting?
-3750.
Okay. Okay. So the theory is even if you were at 98%, it would be good bets.
Yes.
Okay. I started doing a little. I got caught up in something else. I started doing some research because there's such a thing called. I've been kind of digging into the math a little bit, but it's called. I guess the way to explain it is. You create analogies for, because in AI, there's something called synthetic data, because there's only so much data available, and they have this insatiable desire, these AI engines, for data. So what they do is they have one AI producing the data that is like simulated or cloned, whatever you want to call it, but it's fabricated, it's not true. And then on the other hand, you have another AI that's consuming it like it's true. And the question is, they think they can get close. It's almost like a Monte Carlo. They can simulate the possibilities.
Because you just can't play millions of – historically, they haven't played this enough times to trust the data. I mean, there's been less than 200 games, number ones versus everybody else.
Yeah, but like a good example is there's a new thing called Sora. And it's not out yet, but it is the most amazing visual thing. Like if you say, show a frog jumping over the Empire State Building in the rain – in July, the sun is bright. Like you write the prompt.
In the rain?
In the rain, and okay. The sun is bright. It's like it's almost maybe the apocalypse. I don't know. And it will, I don't know, it takes a minute or two. It will show it, and it looks like a movie. Hmm. It's like insane how good it is. And the speculation is that they didn't train it on video because there wasn't enough video to train it on. They trained it on an engine for games. So let's say for your Xbox or whatever, mm-hmm. they've got this universal game engine that can really produce amazing quality graphics. And then the AI looked at that as if it was real and then emulated that. So that's synthetic data, right? So what I was trying to do was say, all right, there's not enough of these games, especially in the tournament, but there, even if you look across all games, there's not that many in that high range. Could I go down 8 points, a set of points and then say, okay, how much, if you look at a normal distribution, how much more would this lose? Let's say laying 19 instead of laying 24. And then could I extrapolate out? And I thought I was on to something and then I got distracted. But I'm thinking next year I might want a book.
Well, listen.
Oh, wait. Go ahead.
You don't want a book. I can convince you in 20 seconds. This work's all been done. So in terms of regular season, where there is enough data, mm-hmm. and the bottom line is when you look at a 23-24.5-point favorite, mm-hmm. all right, and there's plenty of data points, those teams win 99% of the time. So the only way you could land on this is a bad bet by me, is to say that the NCAA tournament is inherently more volatile than the regular season, which I would argue the opposite is true.
I disagree with you, Fez. because...
So I actually, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I actually have info on this one because I was looking at just the Sweet 16 games. So that is limited. And the standard deviation is like 14 and a half points on the ATS, where the regular season is like 13. So by a small amount... The Sweet 16 was more varied or higher variance, but I don't think that's enough to account for what you're talking about.
That I can accept because you see all the time pick 'em games where a team will win by 25 because they don't take the foot off the accelerator. Mm-hmm. But I really feel that when does a 25 point favorite lose outright? Well, disinterested, don't show up for whatever reason. That just doesn't happen typically in the NCAA tournament.
So since 2012, this is just regular season, 25 point favorites. 847-5, 99.4% straight up.
But I think the big difference is how many of those are on their home court.
Because,
that's the big difference between the tournament and those regular season favorites.
That's a good point. I would agree that the a home court 24-point favorite is a lot safer than 24-point road favorite.
Same thing, 99.4%, okay. 8-12-5.
Okay, do me a favor, though. Put a cap on – make it. What's the highest now, like 25-point favorites?
Teams can be land 40, you know.
No. I mean during the ones you're batting, like number one seed types.
This year was 27. It used to be like 33.
Yeah, so maybe go up to 28.
Okay.
So and you want to start where, 21? You
said? 23 and a half.
Yeah, so go over 23, under 28, see what happens, and go away. Okay. No, I think you're right. The only thing, first of all, I want to bet against it because it sounds fun, but, you know, maybe it's not that smart bet. But number two is
26-0, 100%.
Wow, that's awesome. That's interesting how few road favorites are. Like
23 and 28 and away.
Let me give you one more piece of data. And then I think this is extremely telling. I queried, what's the greatest upset in the history of college basketball? Guess what it is. I don't know what team it is. I just know the point spread.
Oh, well, I'm guessing it's less than 40.
You're correct. I was shocked by this because, like, one time in football, like, 40-point underdogs have won in football. Okay, famously.
Stanford.
Harbaugh. Yeah, Stanford. UNLV lost as a 43-point favorite.
How are they even a 43-point favorite?
Against the Bison of Howard.
Did they play a high school team?
Exactly, pretty much. And in college basketball, it's 32. I was shocked by this. No 33-point underdog in the history, going back to point spreads, has ever won straight. So, I mean, that doesn't mean that a 27-point favorite, and we had two of them this year, you know, can't lose. But my goodness, it's going to take a 4-standard deviation type of occurrence.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. It's pretty interesting. To me, it's so much more interesting what you're doing than if you had all the numbers there, because then it's just a matter of having access. But you're having to make some assumptions. And to me, people can disagree with them, but I as you talk them through, they're pretty solid as far as I can see.
So that magic number range for him, 23 to 28, in the NCAA tournament, so all time. Going back in the entire database, 19-1, straight up.
And he had the one.
I know about the one. Yes.
All right. So wait a minute then. So Virginia lost.
17.5.
That was only 17.5. Okay.
Yep.
That's interesting.
Because I don't care about the one seeds. I do it for a two seed against a 15. I just want them to be a 23-point
favorite. Oh, so you don't care about
favorite.
The one seed. Okay.
They just got to be laying 23.
That's interesting. So the only thing that would cause me a little apprehension, but I don't know, is... if a team is going to get eliminated, if they are going to get eliminated and there's a minute left, wouldn't the pressure be more than a regular? It does feel like, in a weird way, if it were a minute left in the game, tie game, the number one seed is going to lose more often than they are in the regular season, I think.
I agree with that.
But it's probably not enough to make it bad.
Yeah. You know, one thing, and that assumes fair refereeing. So I'll use an example. So the Iowa gals were playing West Virginia and a Sweet 16 to go to the Sweet 16. And if you're watching the game, it's very clear that everybody wants Caitlin Clark to make the Sweet 16. So I'm not going to say it was fixed, but there were some very favorable calls that went against the Lady Mountaineers.
And did West Virginia still cover?
Oh yeah, they covered.
So it sounds
they're
like
catching
you
16 and they're tied.
Were you in game betting?
No, I bet pre-flop. I took it plus 16.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to bet against Iowa every game.
Just because you hate generally women, so if there's a woman that people are...
Her point she's going to be overinflated.
It was 32.5. I think she landed on 31 or 32, so she went under. It was 32.5, and her three-point prop was juiced up to 4.5, 5.5. She made 5.
Well, you think about it. How many people on earth well, let's just say in the last year, I've had as much pressure she has on her in sports.
And distractions.
Yeah.
You know, but both.
Like in a weird way, if she loses, it's like if Bobby Fischer lost in 72, it would have, you know, one of the reasons he was so freaked out and maybe flipped out after was the whole world was like watching, but they also wanted him to beat Russia. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, she's like trying, she represents all the women. I mean, if she loses in the Sweet 16, I mean, she's probably very upset, you know, like a guy would be. I'm not saying it's about gender, but because she feels like she let down all the little girls or what. So I think the pressure is on.
Well, and also
they're 8-point favorites on Saturday against Colorado.
Can you be like the best woman's college basketball player if you'd never won a title?
That's interesting. So she, you mean of all time?
Of course. No one cares. No one cares about titles.
What?
Not in the women's game.
I mean, in any game, everything people are.
Did Nancy Lieberman win a title? Or eight titles? I couldn't even tell you. And she was the greatest woman, right? I mean,
Nancy Lieberman.
Yeah, she was.
Isn't she a senator?
She had a tryout with an NBA team.
I bet that was serious. What year was that?
Late '70s. I'm guessing.
Was it the guy from the White Sox that used to have he'd have people for I don't even know. He'd have
Disco is Dead Night.
Yeah, Bill Beck or whatever his name was. He had all kind of things where he would like go to a town and then like cut half his team and have only locals play. I mean, it was old school stuff like that.
I've got a top 10 list of the greatest college
this
women's
is your personal,
basketball.
Your personal
no,
top 10?
Not mine. Okay. I don't have one of those, but a top 10 list. And Nancy Lieberman is nowhere on this list, Fez.
Fez.
She's in the Hall of Fame.
Okay, that means something.
She's in the Basketball Hall of Fame.
That means something. Now, there wasn't the WNBA wasn't started, obviously, back in the
No, NBA. So she graduated college, Old Dominion, 1980, but.
Are we sure she graduated?
But she was the 15th overall pick in the 1997 WNBA draft, which is the first ever WNBA draft.
17 years later.
Yeah. The inaugural WNBA draft. So, yeah.
I mean, she was at least, 30-something, late 30s.
That's poor GM right there. That's a bad
did she
call.
Play? Did she play?
Yeah.
Did she score more or less points than Jordan did on the Wizards?
At age 39, she was the oldest player. It says here that in 2008, at 50 years old, she signed a 7-day contract with the Detroit Shock, breaking her own previous record as the oldest player in league history.
Okay, that doesn't seem – I don't take that all that seriously. Okay. But how did she do in the league? Get some stats. Okay. What do you think? Does this back your point, Fez?
She played 25 games in 97.
How many points did she average?
2.8.
See, Fez.
That's not what you want out of your first round.
No, no.
Second round pick.
Oh, okay.
I don't think doing a disclosure of how somebody did at age 39 is a good representation
that's
of how good
point.
They were at age 19.
Like I said, she's a Hall of Famer, okay?
So 15th pick
playing against plumbers
in the second round.
Yeah, they probably
she
had like
she
five
would
teams.
She would crush a Hole's Claw or you know some of those gals on that.
Okay,
top
that's like oh, Jim Brown's way better than this Barry Sanders kid.
Jim Brown.
He was. I
tell you this, I never saw Jim Brown play in my life, but my dad was not a big sports fan at all, really. He was a coal miner. He just focused on coal. But the only guy he'd ever talk about was Jim Brown. Like, if you ever heard like someone talking football, he goes, Jim Brown. He goes, so he'd be like, he'd hurt you or something. And then he always told this story about Jim Brown used to get tackled, and like eight people would tackle him. And he'd get up really slow. It looked like he was almost dead. And then the next time he's running just as hard as he was before. I don't know. But you know what's funny about Jim Brown? He retired when he was 29.
Did not know that.
Yeah, he was the leading rusher in the history of the NFL. And he retired when he was like, he had like 9 years. Hmm. He was a 9-time pro, all pro. Not pro bowl was easier. Yeah, I mean... But apparently, and Art Modell was still the owner of the Browns at that point. And apparently, now I think I've got this straight. If not, I'm sorry. Allegedly, that Brown didn't think the racial relations that Modell was behind were great. Hmm. So it's kind of interesting, the idea that and then he went and became in the movies. Remember, how old was Barry Sanders?
I'm looking at now.
Because it's funny. Running backs retire now so young, or they get run out of the league. No pun intended. But
31.
Okay. But back in the day, running backs usually went to 33 or 34. It's kind of weird that when everyone else has been playing longer, running backs play shorter.
Franco Harris was around forever, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, like to 84. He went to Seattle after, actually. Yeah.
Sanders played one more year than Jim Brown.
Okay.
So he played a 10th season.
And Brown played nine. That's unbelievable. I mean, think, I think Mahomes has what, six or seven? Six starting, seven.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if Mahomes retired in 2 years,
wow,
how crazy would that be?
Yeah.
I mean, Jim,
hard to fathom, yeah.
John, Jim Harbaugh would celebrate, but what the hell? All right. So we were talking
about big favorites.
Big favorites. So you went 4-0, and people impugned your character thinking you loved attention.
Yes, and they're largely right. I accept that.
You just love attention.
I kind of became pod committed after I lost Purdue. I've like, I gotta make back my 45 units one unit at a time.
See, that's what I'm thinking. I almost thought that made it where you shouldn't have played anymore because no matter what, you're going to be down.
But I disagree. I just need to live the good life. And by age 83,
that's your goal.
By age 83, I probably am going to go right into the black with, as long as I don't suffer another loss.
So like in 10 years, if somehow you lose another one, it'd be like, that's it. There ain't enough time.
Exactly.
And then he'd be, you know how like someone's wife dies and then they deteriorate really fast,
oh, yeah,
and are dead like in a month or whatever?
God, have a broken heart.
Yeah, if Fez ends up losing a number one seed, he'll be dead in
oh,
6
no
months.
Doubt.
It's like nothing else to live for.
Well, and the thing is like I play these all the time. I mean,
so
I'm
maybe you should go back. Have you lost any others?
Well, yeah, I mean, but I played hundreds of
them. Are you up lifetime?
Yeah, I mean, I've like no overtime in the Super Bowl. I played that since I was like 23. I mean, I was making that bet in the early 90s, betting that the Super Bowl wouldn't going
well, wouldn't it be interesting to see every bet you have laying over 15 to win one?
Yeah, I'm confident. I'm because I made so many in so many Super Bowls. Like Millennium, one time they had a bet: will any team recover more than one onside kick? And you're like, delay 100 to make a dollar. It was like, it was free money. It was a free 1% ROI.
Now let me ask you this. So you're on record, and I think you explained this recently, I don't remember the answer, of saying that, hey, in general, I hate, you know, if it's minus a big favor and there's a take back, that corridor's so big, even though the actual whole percentage isn't so bad, it's hard to beat it. What makes this different?
What makes it different? Great question, by the way, because like the average, and I just talked about how like I hate like the minus 250 plus 200, and people are like, oh, it's still beatable. Bullshit. It's not. It's just like, because the true number can be like minus 202 or minus 248. Mm-hmm. You know, the no vig number, either way, no good bets to be made. But what happens that as soon as you, the recreational bettor wants to bet a toothpick to win a lumberyard. They want to bet a little to win a lot. And so the point of discontinuity, if you will, is that even the guys that like to parlay money lines, once that favorite becomes a jumbo favorite, like they're going to win 95% plus and they got to lay minus 2,000, even those guys that like to parlay the money lines say, you know, I just can't do it. And so there's and so what happens is the dastardly bookie, yeah, he has a huge bid ask differential, but even with that, even if he puts like minus 5,000, he only pays 15-1. It's still, the 15-1's horrendous, but the minus 5,000 can still have value despite that huge bid ask differential.
You would love to open up a sports book that only paid out like jumbo, like the only thing you had was like 15-1 or more.
I think there's a niche there. Absolutely. Where, you know, and this is largely reflected. If you look at the betting exchanges, all right, and like if the average dastardly cockroach bookie deals minus 8,000 or 20-1, all right, you're not going to see the betting exchange typically deal in like minus 5,000 plus 5,000. It tends to be a little bit higher,
okay,
instead of the midpoint. Yeah.
Now, if you had the opportunity, wouldn't you like to parlay the four? Let's say you had four this year. Would you like to parlay them? And I guess the answer I think you're going to give here, to make it simple, is if you could get the best number on all four, yes. But since you'd have to play at one book, odds are you wouldn't be getting the best number.
That is the answer.
Okay.
Yes.
But if you do correct money management, it can replicate the same thing in a way.
Yeah,
right?
But he yelled at me for doing this. We had this discussion last night. Fez gave me a lecture about why.
Fez gave you a lecture? No,
yeah,
way.
About why my money line parlay of UConn, Houston, and Purdue was bad.
Even though it won.
Correct.
And the rationale was
that he wasn't getting the best number available on each one of
those. I got robbed on all the numbers. Yeah.
And but I told him
first. I hope there's one he got the best number on.
Well, they were close. They were very close.
One of them absolutely. Like, I think on the Houston, you got the you got the good number. But the because I actually played last round. I played, these aren't bridge jumpers, mm-hmm. but I thought there was solid values. It turns out a 13.5-point favorite wins 90% of the time. Okay. So, so Connecticut, was like, well, there was cheap money lines in the second round of the tournament. And I played some select ones. I did win them all, but that one was dicey. I had Houston. They're up 12 with a minute to play. Oof. Goes overtime.
So it's funny because this to me is so much more interesting than how you typically play. Hmm. I mean, like you thought it, I mean, you're an innovator on this, meaning this is not something that any respected professional has been out front on ever. Now, there has been for the Super Bowl things like, you know, bet the no
same
on
concept.
Extra point.
Yeah.
But this is.
Will the ball hit the upright?
Yeah. You know? But this is different because it's like, it feels very square. It feels almost like. What martingale or how do you call that?
Martingale.
Yeah.
Is, you know, that's a word I've read 1,000 more times than I've ever said it or heard it said.
Double your bets. That's all you said.
but because the theory is, oh, this isn't going to happen. So I'm going to do something that seems impossible. Like I can't lose 10 in a row.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm going to earn a profit every time, baby. Oh, I lost 6. No big deal. That's the mentality, right? Well, that's wrong. Right, because as Sklansky said, there is no series of bets that are negative EV that can be positive EV. That you can't change what's at the core of the bets. What you're doing is saying there's a very unlikely event, and I think it's even more unlikely.
That's correct.
That's square, but it's not in this case. The concept is,
and it flies. You know, the great thing about this, it flies completely contrarian to psychological studies where they ask people, how likely is it mm-hmm. that
the black swan concept?
How likely is it that there's 25 states in the United States that are north of Canada, some portion of them, and people will say, oh, I'm 99% sure that. That's false.
I'm 99% sure it's false.
Okay, you would be shocked because there are 25.
There's a lot,
there's 27 states that are north of Canada because there's an island.
I swear to God, that's one I've never heard.
There's an island in the middle of Lake Erie that's Canadian territory, and it turns
out
we
could take it at any time if we wanted.
We could, but it turns out so like all these states like that, like Iowa and Washington and Oregon and the like and Colorado are north of like that center of Lake Erie.
Okay.
But then everything Maine and upwards is actually north of Canada as well.
Yeah, but that's not like half the state.
And then Alaska too.
And it is. It is half. It's amazing.
I'm not sure that's true. Look that up, AJ.
Might be 27.
How could that be? That seems crazy. Because there's like four levels of states, it seems like. You could say there's the very
You're
north,
right.
the very... How could
27 half, states.
Okay. You know, I've often...
More than half the states are north of Canada.
You know,
it's a... But go ahead, Archie.
Well, no. I was going to say, we had a globe in the office, and I was talking to Mary, and I was looking at it, and it was probably made in like 2000, let's say. But I had a globe when I was a kid, right? So that's the one I go, this isn't right. There's no such country as this. So I'm gonna question. AJ's bringing something over.
That red dot is the southernmost tip of Canada.
So that still doesn't seem like 27 states.
Does that?
Remember,
so how is California? That's impossible.
Because it's not California. It's the very northern tip
very
of California.
Northern, California is
north, north of north of the southern tip of Canada.
Is this going to turn into like a flat Earth thing?
So wait a minute. So what we're saying is whatever state that is above California, I think one's Washington,
Oregon.
Right?
Oregon.
And one's Oregon? Yeah. And then I think it's Idaho right there. But what we're saying is somehow all of Oregon and all of Washington is above the low point of Canada.
Yeah, I know.
Don't believe it. Don't believe it.
But the point is, so this flies contrary to what I'm saying. The average person, when they say they're 99% sure of something, is really wrong.
Exactly.
The vast majority of the time. And once you go above 90% or 95%, you overestimate the probability of an event. Mm-hmm. But this is the one contrarian. This is the one where that's not the case.
That's what I'm saying. It's very counter-instinctual. Mm-hmm. I love it because it took initiative. It took creativity.
Uh-huh. I took my bankroll for a little while.
No. I'm saying, the reality is, even though people who strive very hard themselves to get any attention are jealous of the attention you get from it.
What I will say, the one sports bettor that's more mathematical than me by a good margin is this guy named Elihu Feistel, and he's writing this book about that. I got a copy of it. I didn't understand it. I told him, too much
Conquering
math.
Conquering Risk, right?
Yeah, I said, too much. There's another book.
It's a new one coming out.
And okay. I said, it's too complicated. It's too many forms. Too much math. It was my critique for him. But this guy's just loaded with math, but he'd be the first to tell you, oh, you know, these are really good bets as well. He famously lost in Purdue also.
Okay. That's interesting. Okay. So here's what I think. I'm not sure we should, but I think what we should do is maybe we start a Twitter account or we do it on my account, something, that every time that you're doing one of these bets, that once you make the bet, you publicly announce it.
Oh, I like that.
And then we can get a streak going. Like, we get a bunch of followers. Mm-hmm. Let's think about this a second. But that might bring the... If we get a bunch of followers, they're going to bring... That would actually help the underdog payouts in theory, right? If everyone's playing... If there's not everyone, but a big chunk of people's playing the favorite.
I get less good prices, but my take is there's always... The public's always willing to bet this stuff.
Yeah. You know, love trend. Anything that goes against what the public does has a better chance of sustaining because you can tell someone you're not going to. First of all, most quote unquote professionals don't believe you're positive EV on this. I mean,
I disagree with that.
No, I mean, maybe they were talking to your face.
They disagree with making the bet. They don't disagree.
How can that be? The only two factors is it positive EV, and are you betting an amount that is within the Kelly criterion for your risk? That's the only two factors, right?
There's a third factor. What? They feel that when the return is so small, even if it's plus EV, it's just not with.
First of all, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Let me use an example. Do you agree
with them here?
I disagree with them. So it'd be like Phil Hellmuth is in the World Series of Poker and he gets pocket aces and he shoves all in. Mm-hmm. All right. Mathematically, that's good.
No, that's not a good analogy.
No.
Because that's not the end of your bankroll. If you lose, you're not out of the contest.
Right, and that's what their argument would be, hey, you got to bet. If you're used to betting to win one unit, used to betting 1% to put, 45% of your bankroll in play.
So don't put that much in play. I mean,
And I think they would agree. It's like, hey, if you limited your bet to 5% of your bankroll, maximum bet size, I think they would agree, hey, it's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it fine or is it a winner? Which most
I think I think they say it's not worth the aggravation and the trouble and the light and
it's a lot of touchy
and the short life expectancy
for people who scoff at other people's emotions. They're sure bringing a lot of emotions into it.
Fair enough. By the way, should Phil Hellmuth shove with his pocket aces?
But in that case, the difference is that if he chooses not to play, what's the opportunity cost of losing?
Right.
If he loses, he has a big edge that is now lost.
Yes.
Right? So I think for him, it's anything. It's almost like staying alive, right? Is what kind of odds would you have to get to play Russian roulette? Well, if you lose, you're never going to ever play again. So if you're winning better, how much would Doyle, Brunson, if they gave him 10 million to one to play Russian roulette when he was like 30, it wouldn't have been a good bet.
It's a great example. If you could say the main event was going to go on for like 3 years, you would never shove with aces because just be cool, and I'll slowly accumulate my chips.
If you're positive. Now, if you're negative EV in the event, you want to be as random as possible.
That's right.
All right. That's interesting. All right. So speaking of numbers, one of us had the best record during the picks that we gave here, and that was me. 5-1.
Amazing you couldn't turn that into bracket success.
Well, if somehow we graded, you know what's so funny? It didn't dawn on me until about an hour before this pod that because I can project exactly the chance of me winning. It's just, it will take about a half hour to do. I so wanted to get that. My guess is I'm somewhere in the 38%, 40% range. And I was going to goad you into like giving me 2-1. Mm. But I didn't have time.
I appreciate it.
So I don't know the exact number. But I think it's fair to say, well, would you give me 2-1?
No.
Okay. So you're not so sure yet. So maybe wait for your gloating until the chips are counting.
Right. Well, you were gloating last week before a game was played.
That's true. That's true. That was a little premature. In a weird way, the fact that everything went against me and I'm still in it kind of speaks to that. I still think you exposed yourself. Listen, you have a chance to have a monster, though. If Illinois wins, I mean, I guess Connecticut still being in it is tough. They might be the best team.
Connecticut?
Yeah.
I mean, they're considered
the best. Why did all of us want to bet against Connecticut?
Because they're a tough region.
Except that they've had the easiest road I've ever seen.
And I mean, Fez brought it up, and we reiterated it on the pod, was look at their path, right? They play the Big East tournament at the Garden. They take a bus ride back to Storrs. Then they go to Brooklyn for the first two rounds. Now they go to Boston, where it's all UConn territory.
Against San Diego State?
But they were supposed to play Auburn. And that's, I mean, Auburn was, they were the fifth best team in KenPom.
Yeah, they got dealt a massively difficult four, and the four got booted. So now, now they get to play a bunch of Aztecs that are going to just get pounded in Buffalo.
Speaking of that, let's keep rolling. So you went 4-2, though, AJ.
I did.
Scott went 4-2.
Yep.
And Fez was not really engaged in the discussion, but you think 3-3.
Yeah. Nevada.
It's not so bad.
Nevada. Nice job.
Well, you saw Dayton for 10 minutes, and you figure, I know about this team. I was surprised at Dayton myself, just from everything I heard no one liked.
Well, Nevada was winning by a million and melted, so it was...
Just like you in this bracket.
Maybe so. Maybe so.
All right. So we're through one game?
Through one game.
Next game.
San Diego State against UConn.
UConn, 11.5-point favorites.
This is a better version of UConn's squad last year that played against they're playing against a lesser version of San Diego State's team from last year in a rematch of the national championship game that couldn't have been much more lopsided. Like, San Diego State's a slow starter. I think just like last year's game, they're going to fall behind and they're just going to get boat raced. San Diego State wants to turn this game into a grind, and you just can't do that against UConn. It's impossible. Hurley has these guys so locked in that, like, he has them convinced that they're an underdog. I don't know how he's done it, because they're considered the best team, but they go into every game feeling like they're being disrespected, and they're just assaulting teams. And I think Ladie has a hard time getting his game going against Donovan Klingon, who is just a monster in the paint. And I just think things are going to roll downhill. UConn is a top-tier pick-and-roll team, top-tier, going against a defense that struggled with that all season long. And on the other end, like I said, UConn just makes it so tough to score inside. And that's an Aztec team that just can't shoot. I'm going to go with a first half bet. -6 is going to be my like. Of my two plays, is my second favorite play on the board is UConn in the first half.
Why first half?
Because I think that they're going to get out to such a – like, it's the same thing they did in the national championship last year. They jumped out into a big lead, and they just – they didn't let them recover. But San Diego State, they have a hard time putting together offense. And they
so you're saying a hard time playing from behind?
Yes.
So why wouldn't we want the whole game then? Because you think they're going to be behind at halftime.
I like to shorten the sample because of what UConn has been doing to teams. And it's been basically blowing teams out early and just riding it out. And I think when you've got a game in 2 days, you tend not to be quite as aggressive as you would be if you didn't have a game the next day.
I have a trend on this game, and it's kind of a shocker, actually, how good it is. This goes into the whole idea of winning your conference tournament. Mm-hmm. Any team with a 7 or more game winning streak in the Sweet 16 round. So you've won 2, sometimes 3, very rarely. All right, you've won 2 to get there. Conference tournament is usually 3 or 4.
Right.
So 2 plus 3 is 5, plus 4 is 6. So it's saying you had a streak coming in the tournament, you had a streak during the tournament, and you are still streaking.
Mm-hmm.
And those teams are 21-7 against the spread in the Sweet 16 round. It's pretty strong.
No let up.
5 points per game.
Right. That would be the rationale. So here's a team that's used to, like, going into them. People say, you know, you don't want a winning streak going into the tournament. All right. That's a negative. But they're still succeeding. And you don't want to, like, win your conference tournament, you know, that having that streak, especially the second game, catches up.
That's
to
exactly. That's what we uncovered the second. But we've got the new. Now we've got the extended break again. And now you're just hot at this
point. So if you still win in these bad situations, maybe you're just undervalued.
Yeah. So it's 21-7. That's very strong. And my best bet coming up has that plus another trend, if you believe it. I gave it away. People really know who's got a streak. But one thought for you to consider, AJ. So you can say whenever there's a streak like this, you can say, or any kind of trend, you can say, well, is it the team's offense is scoring more or is the defense yielding less? That's the two ways you can gain ATS, right? Well, this is the team scoring is about the same. There's no extra. They give up 5+ points less. So in theory, what would you think of saying, I want to go San Diego State under their team total?
I would love it.
Like that.
I do like that because I think San Diego State, I just think they have a hard time. Their one guy that scores, their best scorer, is their big man, and he's going against maybe the best defensive big man in basketball. So,
and Connecticut kept up their intensity defensively against Stetson, right? If I remember right.
They've allowed 52 points and 58 points in their two games so far.
All right, so that's good. Okay.
Yeah, I like this as well. The number 62.5. So I like the under San Diego State 62.5. So going through our database in this round in the Sweet 16, if you are 10 or more than 10 point favorite, which is where UConn is here, you're 7-1 straight up, but you're only 2-6 ATS. But I thought what was more pressing was the 2-6 to the over. So the unders are actually 6-2, and if you look at the underdog scoring, they're averaging 60 points per game.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's because the favorites are scoring, they're averaging 72 or 71.5, and the dogs are averaging 60. So that's why these games are going on.
Hey, listen, this Hurley is a really good coach, and I'm going to give one play that indicates why. It's the end of the first half. Northwestern scores. There's 42 seconds left, so Northwestern's going to get their 2-for-1, right? No. Because somehow Hurley has figured this out. So they lollygagged input. All right, tick. The 30-second clock hasn't started. The play clock is rolling. But they got to input. They have to inbound the ball within 5 seconds. So with 37 seconds left, they inbounds it, and they just roll down the court. Now the ball's bouncing down the court very slowly. 36, 35, 34. The shot clock does not start until the offense touches the ball, which they do with 30 seconds left. So they essentially roll. It's like
so the game clock starts, but the shot clock doesn't.
Right. So the game clock never stops. So the game clock was at 42 when Northwestern scored, and it was at 30 when the shot clock
it's
started.
It's not just he knew to do that. He had them trained
exactly.
to do that.
Exactly.
That's pretty sure.
This would only be at the end of the first half because at the end of regulation, under 2 minutes, the clock stops.
That's right. Yeah. So like compare and contrast Samson Houston's coach, which is not an analytics expert, versus what this Hurley is doing. And like that's just one instance. I'm sure he's doing 8 other things I'm unaware of that's optimal.
Is he related to Bobby Hurley from Duke?
Yes.
Yes. Brothers.
Oh, I thought it was the same person, but it's a brother.
Brothers,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. That's interesting. And what does Bobby Hurley do?
He's also a coach.
For whom?
He was the coach at Arizona before this coach.
He's at ASU, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Arizona State.
Mm-hmm. Huh. See, for long, though.
And the shot clock is 30 seconds.
Yes.
See, things keep changing, man.
Yep.
And Patrick Ewing is not the coach. Doesn't
not
play
the coach
or
of Georgetown.
Coach.
No.
But he's doing commercials for DraftKings.
I saw that.
They're good, too.
And you were right, Scott. Arizona State, not Arizona. Yep. I don't know why I said that.
You got to take a shower after the game, right? Or something like that. All right. Okay. So somehow Scott jumped on my pick, but okay, I am officially and first going under San Diego State, 62.5.
Yep.
All right. So you got your pick on this. I've got mine, and Scott piggybacked me. Congratulations.
You know, I'm going to go second. I'll go ahead and lay the minus 11's available, right? I can lay 11?
Yep. Yep.
Okay, I'm going to take minus 11. That'll be a bet.
Okay. Now, you just don't want to piggyback, but you like the San Diego State.
I like all this, yeah.
Yeah. You know, my dad goes back 10 years, the last 10 seasons of the tournament. I think the game's changed so much that some stuff you can do earlier, but okay. The biggest spread of any Sweet 16 game in all that time has been only 14. So this is about as getting as big as it gets. So.
Yeah, 14 in 2013, Florida against Florida Gulf Coast.
Thanks.
It's probably a good money line, minus 825.
Dunk City, right?
Yeah.
Next game.
Alabama against North Carolina.
Oh, I got to think NC here.
UNC minus 4.5.
I'm not going to have a play on this game on the side. This game all boils down to which Alabama shows up and if their shots fall. Everything with them revolves around three-pointers falling. And if they shoot 57% like they did against Charleston in the first game, you are not beating that team. And if they shoot 24% like they did against Florida in the SEC tournament, they are not beating anybody because they're not good enough on defense to withstand a shooting night like that. The thing I have Alabama in my bracket, and if I could redo my bracket, I would not. I think
what did you see that causes you to reevaluate?
I've seen that their defense is not getting better. And when you look at the surface metrics, you say, oh, well, in that game against Grand Canyon, they only gave up 61 points. That's got to be a good defensive game. Except Grand Canyon shot 2 of 20 from three, and these were not face guarded threes. These were wide open shots they were missing.
And they were 23 of 37 from the free throw.
14 points left on the free throw. Like,
but isn't free throw or isn't shooting in general a lot of randomness? And if it can still advance after having two bad shooting days, that means you
no,
maybe
Grand Canyon, no, it was Grand Canyon shot 2 of 20. Their opponent.
I'm sorry.
So, and they were still life and death to win the game.
Yeah.
Despite that horrible night by Grand Canyon. So they should be out.
So it makes me feel like Alabama's just on borrowed time. North Carolina was a team I came into the tournament not totally trusting.
And the conference is sucking also.
You're talking about the SEC. Yeah, the ACC has been remarkably good. But yeah, so this game's going to be a pass for me. This is the highest total on the board, and I'm probably going to play the over.
All right, what else we got?
I like the conference. A good conference versus bad conference favors North Carolina.
All right, so in general, how's the conference since done? I mean, like, who's good, who's bad so far in the tournament?
Oh, ACC has massively exceeded expectations.
All right, so ACC good?
Yes. SEC disappointed.
Anything else?
The ACC's been, like, I mean, they lost Virginia early, and they've just rolled. The Mountain West has been dreadful. They've not won anything.
That's pretty consistent, right,
yeah,
over the years.
They've got San Diego State, the only non-altitude team, is the only one that's still alive.
Yeah, I tell you, bad attitude, it's how hard to win. Oh, altitude. All right.
I'm on North Carolina. I had Grand Canyon to beat Alabama outright.
So is this – how many picks do you have? What level is this?
So this is – if we're making three picks –
we're not necessarily making three. There's only eight games.
Okay. Well, this could be one – I like this play a lot. I watched the entire – I had Grand Canyon money line against Alabama, and AJ said it. The poor shooting.
They're not repaying on that one, are they?
The poor shooting. Let's go. The poor shooting aside, but also the free throw line is really what jumps out to me, is that the athleticism of Grand Canyon was able to cause Alabama to foul defensively. Alabama plays a lot of pressure defensively, and Grand Canyon had a lot of great athletes that were able to get past defenders and cause fouls. So they got to the free throw line, they just didn't convert. North Carolina is a much better free throw shooting team. Baycott gets fouled all the time. He makes his free throws. RJ Davis can drive, get fouled. He makes his free throws. So I think if North Carolina utilizes some of their athleticism, Alabama's going to foul, pressure defense. North Carolina will make their free throws and cover.
And Alabama's best three-point shooter got concussed at the end of that last game.
Correct.
Latrell Wright-Sell, he's not going to play in this game.
Okay. Next game.
Next game, Illinois and Iowa State.
For all the marbles.
Iowa State 1.5.
Iowa State's got to be 5, right?
Iowa State 1.5.
Is a big difference in style, Matt. Like a different.
You seem nervous.
No. these teams are just about polar opposites. Illinois wants to run. They're a great offense with a shady defense. And Iowa State is a terrible offense with an incredible defense. I just think it is going to be difficult for Iowa State to make this into the slog type of game that they're looking for, because this Illinois team is just so talented. Terrence Shannon is playing like the best guy in this tournament. He is unstoppable right now. And the fact is, if after him, Illinois probably has the next two best players as well, in Domask and Hawk.
Love Illinois here.
I certainly like them.
They're not one of my top picks.
No.
So how can they have the three best players?
Well, because they say Jimmy's and Joe's and X's and O's.
Kentucky has lots of good players.
Kentucky had all better players than Oakland, and it didn't matter.
So, and this is the Illinois coach is bad?
The Illinois coach has not had much tournament success, Brad Underwood.
He's in the Sweet 16 right now.
It's about time.
Do you guys think this is correlated, Iowa State to the under or Illinois
100%,
to the over?
100%.
Okay.
100%.
So we're saying Iowa State to the
under.
Illinois to the over.
Okay. No, not 100%, but you're saying there's a clear
I think there's a very clear correlation.
So when there's a correlation that's clear, Fez, what do you think the win, if the first one happens, what is the win percentage on the second one?
54.5%.
You think that's a super clear one?
Yeah.
Not more than that?
Yeah.
So a number that kind of points to what Fez is saying, Iowa State is 4-6 this season overall when their opponent reaches 70 points. Only 10 times all season their opponent's gotten to 70. Illinois has failed to score 70 points three times all season. So if Illinois gets into that 70 range, I think that they're very difficult to beat.
What's the total in the game?
It's 146.
Okay.
So if it
feels high.
I think it depends on who you like. So you probably like Iowa State then.
Well, yeah, all sane people do. No, I'm joking. Okay. All right. No, listen, Illinois getting here, to be honest, surprised me. And but again, I thought BYU, well, let me see. That would have been, I'm sorry, Illinois would have played BYU, right? Yeah, but yep. They didn't. Okay. Yeah. What happened in that BYU game?
They couldn't shoot. I mean, all these teams that are so three-point dependent, all it takes is one bad game and you're dead.
Well, we didn't hear any of that on Thursday and Friday's analysis. It seems like everyone embraced, like 10 years ago, I used to handicap and think, okay, this team plays well inside. They should do well in the tournament. The big arenas, sight lines. Mm-hmm. I don't hear that anymore.
Because there's not many bigs that matter anymore.
So.
The Klingon, though.
Klingon matters. Edie matters. There seems to be a lot of them
tell
still
you,
hanging around this
doesn't matter.
Year.
Your man, Cockbrenner.
he's been incredible so far.
He's good luck with his career in Eastern Europe. That's all I
think
I
the sight
say.
Line.
No, he wasn't incredible.
I think the sight line things doesn't matter as well. Also, maybe until we get to like the, once we get into like the football stadiums in the Final Four and whatnot, because a lot of these teams now, their arenas on campus are huge. Like a lot of the big schools. So like when they go to the NBA arenas, there's not a lot of difference.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, okay. All right, so this is like probably your fourth best pick?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, next game.
Next game, we are going to Friday, North Carolina State and Marquette. And this is probably my least favorite side or total, so I'll leave it to you since I know this is your favorite.
Marquette -6.5, total 151.5.
Okay, take off the rubber band, everyone. First off, also NC State falls into the category of 7 or more. They actually have 9. They have a 9-game winning streak or plus, 9+. I don't know. I don't remember which exactly. And in that case, 13-3, the team on such a winning streak, and plus 8 points per game. Pretty damn strong. But there's also another trend, and this one is fascinating. And this one is so simple, but it's so good. If you're a 9 seed or worse in the Sweet 16, and you're playing an 8 seed or better, so you're not playing each other. There's times that, you know, a 9 will play a, you know, 10 or whatever it is. In those games, 13-4-1 for the worst seed, the underdog Cinderella seed. All right. And here's what's really fascinating about it. They score about an equal number of points as you'd expect. They give up 6.25 points less than expected. So what we're going to do here is identify Marquette as the one who's going to score less and make the very best bet of the entire tournament under Marquette. What number are we looking at here?
We're looking at Marquette team total is under 78.5. I love that.
Uh-oh, there's another bet coming. But I tell you this, you think about it, it's one thing to have two disparate trends on it, both the win streak and the bad seed. But then the idea of they both really are about defense and the other team scoring less. Remember, that was the big win streak, too. That really lends itself to, obviously, the opponent in this case.
Another reason I might like this, and, you know, I'm in a mental block. Marquette's point guard.
Tyler Kolek,
yeah. So Kolek had an uncharacteristic 5 turnovers. He doesn't turn the ball over very much. And so at the end of the game, he goes to put the big Marquette sticker, you know, he, like, stamps it on the board, and he thrusts it onto the whiteboard. It just falls off. It doesn't stick. And the announcer goes, another turnover by Kolek.
So,
but he might be more careful with the ball.
Oh, so you're saying slow down a little bit.
Yes.
Okay, okay.
So going through the history of the database, if you are a double-digit seed in the Sweet 16, doesn't matter favorite or not, any double-digit seed in the Sweet 16, 13-8-1 ATS, 15-7 to the under.
Now, listen, if you are going to play...
And that's why I think, and most the under is coming from the opponent of the lesser seed.
The opponent is averaging 70.4 points.
If you are going to play the side on this game, And I frankly got this wrong. I would have, if you would have asked me, what's the Yale San Diego State line going to be after all these favorites win all day Saturday and all of them but Baylor on Sunday, and most of them are covering, I'd be like, oh, this line's going to inflate to 6.5 or 7, and it didn't happen. It basically stayed at 5.5. I was shocked. It shows how the world has changed even in 10 years in sports betting. But nevertheless, all these success of all these favorites means I have to feel moving forward, you're going to see a little more pressure and these sportsbook managers looking to like jack up these lines a little bit more, saying, I'm not going to let that happen again, and make it more expensive on the favorites, such that I think you'll see a better number than the current number in NC State.
Okay. I also think, and I want to get your thoughts, AJ, I also think that when you have two teams that weren't necessarily used to being in the Sweet 16, Marquette more so, right? But still, I mean, how would you characterize? I guess what I'm saying is, the first time you're somewhere, or one of the early times you're somewhere, you're a little more nervous. It feels like NC State Marquette won't be the same as Duke North Carolina if they were in the Sweet 16, where their comfort level. Mm. And to me, being a little bit nervous means you get a little tight. You don't run. There's a certain spot you have a three. You would take it in the regular season, but now you wait for a better shot. You know, I think the unders in general happening in the tournament, but I think there's probably a propensity for the non-blue bloods to be affected by the pressure even more. And I don't think Marquette, and I know NC State's not a blue blood.
Yeah, so Shaka Smart kind of famously made a Final Four with VCU the second year he was a head coach. It was 2011. This is the first time since then he's been out of the first weekend. I imagine he's probably feeling a little tight. None of these players have been out of the first weekend, obviously. And in general, like Marquette, like Shaka Smart's roots are make it a defensive game. They want the game to be slow and ugly. That's his it used to be like his hardcore philosophy.
In theory, the favorite's going to set the pace.
Yeah.
Right, in theory. All right.
So in the ACC championship game, NC State held North Carolina to 76 points. And North Carolina is the team that averages over 80 points this season. Mm-hmm. So in a pressing situation, you know, in a big-time moment, they were able to lock down defensively and hold them down. I think you'll see a similar type of game here against Marquette.
I just don't know how NC State's still doing it. I really don't.
Because the big fat guy, DJ Burns.
George
Burns.
23. He doesn't look like Jordan.
Big baby Davis.
Unbelievable.
Next game.
Next game is Gonzaga and Purdue.
Purdue is a 5-point favorite.
Gonzaga has to be really careful here. The biggest knock against this Gonzaga team, who, by the way, is playing at the best level they've played all season. They look like an elite team right now, but they have no depth. None. And they play seven guys. They've basically played the same seven guys all season. They are third from last in the country in bench minutes.
That doesn't mean as much after 5 days rest, does it?
No, well, but here's where it matters.
Edie's going to foul him out.
Zach Edey has shot 392 free throws this year. The second guy has shot 309. Like, that's how much this guy gets to the free throw line.
Is shot in the right way to say it?
Shot. Sorry. Oh, okay. He's shot. The next guy shot 309. I knew it felt funny when I said
definitely
it.
You don't want to say it the other way.
I think it's a variation of shooting.
They shat.
That's what I'm saying. You don't want to say that.
All right.
But it's very difficult.
See, we don't add it, by the way.
It's difficult to guard Zach Edey without fouling him.
Utah State, their coach said, we got 20 fouls. We're going to use them.
But
so do we like Purdue in the second half?
Yes.
That's the move here,
I think,
right?
That's the move.
Yeah. Because I don't like him in the first half because Gonzaga's playing lights out. And
And Gonzaga played Purdue early this year in Hawaii. Gonzaga had a halftime lead.
Ooh.
And it got away from them. They lost by 10.
Okay.
There you go.
All right. So you don't love either side.
I don't love either side.
But if you had to make one bet, the idea of the second half.
I like Gonzaga early, Purdue late.
Venue's good for Purdue.
Yeah, games in Detroit.
They're just playing in Indy. Now they're playing in Detroit, so real close. Like Northern Indiana, not far.
So they look good, right?
Yeah.
They look great.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Because, I mean, to some degree, losing as a 1-16, once you get rolling, it kind of can give you a sense of a mission, it feels like. That first game or two, maybe you're a little nervous.
The one thing about these games, there's a little more variance than normal because, like Shaq, this Edey is so big, he gets fouled on every possession. And it depends what reffing crew is out there, whether they're going to call it, because everyone's just hacking at him.
But unlike Shaq, he's a very good free throw shooter.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I would make the case that Gonzaga, even during their better years struggled when they got to later rounds.
Yes.
We know that, right? Because there's just something about their inability to like, we thought once they started recruiting better, maybe they'd go all the way, but obviously they were the favorites, what, two of the last, like, not last
two
year?
The last 4 years.
Yeah,
but the year they went to the finals and lost, they were the favorite.
Yeah,
and
against, what was it, Houston?
Baylor,
okay, yeah. Mm. All right, next game.
Speaking of Houston, Duke versus Houston.
Houston, 4.5-point favorites, 133.5 is a low total.
So, by the way, real quick, Scott, we had our six teams that could make it. How many are left? What are you laughing at?
Because
how many are not left? How about that, Scott?
There's one that's not left, and it's the one that I had to win the championship, which is Auburn. So, yes, the five teams, the five of the six are remaining.
You're in the 97th percentile ESPN?
Yes.
Not for long.
Yes. So UConn, Houston, Purdue, Arizona, Creighton, Duke, Auburn. We canceled out the Creighton and Duke, though, for the conference tournament thing. So if you really just want to narrow it down, we're down.
But they're both in it, too.
But they're both still in it. Yes, they fit the KenPom criteria.
System's pretty good.
Yeah.
All right, go ahead.
All right, this matchup is essentially the one I was hoping for as someone who has Houston winning the whole tournament. I wanted this matchup in this round because I can't picture a world where soft, floppy Duke isn't just physically manhandled in this game. And
so do you like Houston Lane? It's a small number.
I do. I liked it better at a different number, but Fez said it was a bad idea for some reason.
Well, would you figure the public would be betting Duke?
No, I just have in my personal portfolio, I got Duke to win it all, and I said I don't want to get middled and lay 3.5 on Houston. I said I'll just play the money line on Houston.
So is there a contractual obligation you have to bet the same game?
No, I bet it. I just
So you're making a point. Fez decided not to bet it.
Well, Fez and I have some shared interests, and he didn't want to participate in that one, and I didn't know why.
So this is good for me to address. So AJ and I share an account, at one location. And the advantage of the shared account is that if both of us just take a percentage, then the accounting is so crystal clear. It's so simple.
You
it's
and
so
the
easy.
Accounting. You and
the accounting. No, this is important. This is really important. Here's what the square balls do. They're like, oh, well, you got 300 on this, but I don't have any of that bet. But I got 80% of this bet, and you spent all day effing Monday.
So get
going
your wife to open
these.
Up a separate account at the place.
I mean, yeah, exactly. Because if you don't do that, then you're going to spend all day Monday going through and reconciling with numbers. And guess what? Inevitably, you're not going to balance with three people, and you got to go through all these goddamn bets. And so everything that I do, like I have an account I share three-way, and this is with our buddy Mike, the electrician, and the owner of the electrician. And he wanted to like, I make some other bets myself. I said, it all goes into the pot. There are no exceptions. And I don't care if I hate the bet. I'm taking a third of it.
Well, there you go. So anyway, you like Houston.
I like Houston. The concern is that Duke will get a Duke whistle, and Houston plays physical.
In Dallas?
That's what I think will help, because Houston got a terrible whistle in Memphis against Texas A&M, and they won't survive that again.
And Houston's a very physical team.
Yes.
So the way the game's
they foul every possession.
And Duke shot over 40 free throws in that
So
game.
Let's get some—
A&M did.
For some reason, you're trying to make it inscrutable which picks you have. So if you haven't given it yet, don't give it. But what picks are you making so far?
UConn -6 first half is one of the two picks I'm going to have.
Uh-huh.
My best bet is on the next game.
Okay. And then, but you've given other picks. So what's the other picks?
I like the over in Clemson, Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
I like Illinois.
All right. And
here I like Houston.
Okay, so you've got a strong opinion on Houston, Illinois over Clemson, is that right?
Illinois over Iowa State.
Illinois on the side, right, and then over Clemson.
Oh, over in the Clemson Arizona game.
Okay, and then UConn in the first half is a pick.
That is yes.
All right, so these are leans, and then you got your pick, and now you've got a best bet coming up.
Yes.
All right, next game then.
Well, let me just give you a little trend
here. Go ahead.
So I went since 2012. The 1-4 matchups, the ones in the Sweet 16, the ones are 12-4 straight up, but only 9-6-1 ATS.
Okay.
That's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's good. But I mean, to me, I do find some of these trends with specific seeds interesting because of who gets seeded, like we talked about last week in the 11 versus the 12 versus the whatever. But in general, I like the idea of taking half, saying anyone that's not very was considered the bottom half of the bracket after this round, they do, you know, they do really well or whatever, because people underestimate them or whatever. I like that a lot better because I think there's a lot of vagary, variance in just things like six versus this seed. Wouldn't you agree, Fez?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. All right, next game?
Creighton against Tennessee.
Now, this is another one we're going heads up on.
Yes.
Tennessee, 2.5-point favorites.
I'm surprised at this.
Tennessee is my best bet.
Woo!
Wow.
And here is why. Creighton is lucky to be here right now. Creighton should have lost to Oregon. Creighton was... I mean, you can't. We already have basically $5,000 on this bet.
No, we don't have $5,000 on this bet. We have
Illinois and Iowa State. We got the $5,000.
Yeah, there's all kind of things. And then you might not be 85%.
Fair enough.
But we'll have another $300 on this.
Okay. Creighton has shot really, really well so far in this tournament, and their opponents have shot way worse than expectation. They should have lost the Oregon game, that which was on paper a really great matchup for them.
So what was the score of that game?
They won by 11 overtime. In double overtime.
Was it double overtime?
Yeah.
Hmm.
No, actually won by 13 in double overtime.
So they won by 13.
They won by 13.
Cool.
A game they should have lost. Absolutely should have
lost. Just watched Oregon. So let me ask you what you think the win percentage should have been. Oregon is up at the end of regulation, up 2 points.
Okay.
Shooting the front end of a 1-1 with about 20 seconds remaining in the game.
You know what that reminds me of? Is exactly the Miami-San Antonio situation when LeBron won. They ended up winning. It was game six. Kawhi was shooting free throws with like 26 seconds. Like, it wasn't 1-1. 26 seconds left, up by two. Mm-hmm. So let's just say this. Allen made a hell of a shot to win that game. or I think that went to overtime. So I would say they are certainly favored. Oregon in that spot.
And Oregon missed the front end of the 1-1, and Creighton throw tied the game to send it.
Throw a percentage at, because Scott asked me this last night. I wish I could remember what I answered it.
Let me think. All right, so the free throw shooter, we have any idea how good he was? I mean, just let's assume.
Nefali Dante. AJ, you want to pull up his numbers?
I can pull him up, yeah. Nah, it's not going to be good.
Yeah.
Why?
Because he's a seven-footer.
I got it right here.
He's closer to the hoop.
On the season.
61%. No, actually not terrible.
Yeah.
And it's right. 1-1?
1-1.
All right, so half the time he's going to miss, and then they're going to – and they're down two at that point?
They're ahead by two.
Oregon was up two. The score was 62-60. There's 27 seconds left in the game.
All right, I'm going to ponder this. Let's continue, and I'll tell you in a sec.
Okay, so Tennessee, another coach who has historically struggled in the tournament, at least since he went to the Final Four with T.J. Ford, famously – Kevin Durant was only able to win one game somehow, one of the best college basketball players in the last 30 years. But what he did this weekend was survive the game that has knocked him out of every tournament. He had a game where his offense just could not make a shot. Dalton Knecht, who's been one of the best scorers in the country this year, was 5 of 18. Zakai Ziegler, his senior point guard, 2 of 12. That is the game that has knocked Tennessee out of the tournament every single year. And it didn't get them this year. And now they face a Creighton perimeter defense.
So somehow we're saying the problem that Tennessee typically has, or this Rick Barnes coach team has, reared its head. Somehow they got very fortunate to win. That makes me optimistic.
Yes.
Isn't it the opposite, that that same flaw is there and it's come out once and it's likely to come out again?
The difference, like, these players aren't the kind of players that they were. Like, this is the first time he's had a real offense.
Why did that same flaw happen?
Because he hasn't had a great offense before.
But then why would it happen if his offense is so good?
It just happened.
Because he's the coach.
Did he miss the three-pointers?
18%, I'd say.
But this is – Tennessee's got the best unit on the floor.
I like where RJ's going. So he's saying Oregon's going to win 82%, the team that's up by two. And this makes sense. I agree with your number, but approximately 80%. And it makes sense because think about it. Even best-case scenario – If you're looking at the underdog and the dude misses the free throw and you get the rebound, you're basically staring at best case scenario. All right, I have a 50-50 chance to score to get to overtime and a 50-50 chance to win.
Well, you can shoot the three too.
You could shoot. So let's go. So let's shoot a three at the end. All right, we're going to win maybe 33% of the time. That's like
if
they miss the first one. So the best I can be is 33%.
Yeah,
and that's the good scenario.
No, I agree with that. I agree with that. And sometimes you're going to make the two. Now you're going to win half the time in overtime. Yeah. That's how I looked at it. So,
what was the number, Scott?
I don't know what the number is. Oh, okay. I'm asking. Like, what do you like? That's
you went to the authority.
Gotcha. That's what I'm trying to figure out. Like, that's I want to know like how small the chances were that Creighton not just wins the game. I mean, they won the game by double digits and double overtime, but you're saying a team that shouldn't be where they are. Like, they survived by this, like, so minuscule of a chance.
But on one hand, that was a negative, but his team surviving was a positive.
But the thing about the Creighton-Oregon game, and I wanted to ask AJ about this. So Oregon has two, like, I think NBA prospects, I would imagine. They're just absolutely the two best players on the court. And your man Cockbrenner is just getting destroyed inside.
You're crazy
by
for
this monster
that.
From Oregon. That's like
Cockbrenner had five blocks in this game. He was the best player on the floor.
How many? What was his stat line?
19 points, 14 rebounds, 5 blocks, and 2 steals.
How many? He must. You know, I stopped watching the game in overtime. So Did he dominate overtime? Because
yes.
He must have. Because he had like 3 points with 5 minutes to play. It was like a no show. Okay, all right, fair enough. The overtime points count. Fine. Maybe he's in great shape.
All right. So, but all joking aside, is we saw the weakness in Creighton, and what we saw was the same weakness we expect out of a Barnes coach team, but somehow that's not going to happen again because Lightning doesn't strike twice.
No,
in the same place.
Because Creighton, he talked about my guy Ryan Kalkbrenner, who I always say one of the best defenders in the paint in the country, but Creighton is super soft on the perimeter, and that's where these Tennessee guys started getting some clean looks. I think that they can run away from this Creighton team.
Except in general, that lack of offense is the problem with the Barnes coach team.
Yes, but this is the best offense he's had since he's been at Tennessee, like statistically over the course of the season.
And who was the opponent where they got lucky when they – you said they got – it showed that lack of offense, but they still won?
Texas.
Okay.
Texas looked lousy.
Rick Barnes, old school.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right.
Although if they miss their shots, you know, Kalkbrenner's going to get the rebounds, so
yes,
Tennessee's
will.
Not going to get a lot of second chance points.
Well, it should be a good one. It's interesting. And in this case, so we've got Creighton is the 3 seed and Tennessee's the 2.
Yes.
So it kind of makes sense. All right. Anything else?
That's it.
Let's summarize our picks.
Oh, we got no more games?
No more games.
Whew. All right. The picks. Fez, or, well, I'll tell mine and then Scott's going to have the same, I think. no, but I'll start. I had San Diego State under 62.5. I'll call that a best bet, and then we're going to go under Marquette as the best bet of the year in college basketball from R.J. Bell. Game of the year. Free. Scott, you have the same?
I might as well piggyback on that. San Diego State under 62.5, and I have North Carolina -4.5.
All right.
Best bet, Arizona -7, and a bet for me, Connecticut -11.
Laying the lumber.
Yep.
Best bet, Tennessee -2.5. And UConn first half is a bet for me.
And we've got the button pushed on your Tennessee. Fez, bet your stuff early. I mean, is this the classic bet the favorites early?
Absolutely. Because of what happened Saturday and Sunday this past weekend with the favorites rocking and rolling.
All right. So we got a second pod that should be out right now. If you're not subscribed, you're going to miss some stuff. All right. So start there. Number two, next week, Final Four. And we are going to have a draft of the over-under win totals where we each are making some picks. Today, though, there's also another pod, that's next week, that's going to do some NFL talk and also talk about all the controversy with gambling and baseball, potentially prop shenanigans in Canada. I mean, the southern Canada, the southern states of Canada. Had either you guys ever heard that before, Fez's thing about how many what would your guess have been?
10 or 12?
Yeah. Yeah. Had you heard that before?
Yes.
Well, you used to live in a bar, right?
I'm very good at trivia.
Were you wanting to play those trivia games in the
Absolutely.
Bar? Did you get a was there ever a girl there that got almost scared at how intense you were?
No, they love the intensity.
Straight out of Vegas AM if you want more of that. And like we said, we got a second pod this week. Enjoy.